Welcome back to Search and Rescue Pentagon Escape. Today we are going to read Mikey at 9:40 a.m. Listen what they say.
Mikey, 9:40 a.m. The smoke above me is thick and black, swirling like a hurricane cloud trapped under a roof. I can't even see the ceiling past it, but the room is so dark, I probably couldn't see the ceiling anyway. It's hard to breathe, even through my wet shirt. And I can feel the air getting hotter and hotter as I crawl forward on my knees and elbows. I sweep rubble out of the way as gently as I can, searching for Lena's baby. I don't know a lot about babies, but I figure if one got knocked out of a carrier by an explosion, it should be crying. I can hardly think about the reason it's not crying, or I might start crying myself. In fact, I can't think about anything. I just have to keep searching and keep breathing. And those two activities demand all the focus I can muster. The rest of my panicked thoughts will have to wait. Zachary. I hear Lena screaming in the darkness. It sounds like she's miles away. I guess Zachary is her baby's name. Her shouting is cut short by a fit of coughing. The air in here is poison. There are puddles on the floor where I am, water from the broken pipes all around us. Wet your clothes. I yell to Lena. Try to breathe through the wet cloth. It will help. Mikey. Another voice yells in the dark. It's Sergeant Ginsler, though he sounds strange and breathy, like he's cringing and gasping at the same time. You okay? Yeah. I yell back, because I don't want to worry him and he sounds not so okay himself. Who could possibly be okay right now? You gotta get out of here. He says. Fire. I know he's talking from somewhere to my left. The heat on that side tells me the fire is probably closer to him than to me, but I also know I'm not going anywhere until Lena and her baby are safe. I keep moving, trying to make a low circle from where the baby carrier was toward the right. I figure if there was an explosion and fire to the left, the shockwave would have knocked everything rightward, desks and furniture and walls and windows, and, yeah. Even babies. So I loop around, struggling to breathe through the wet shirt, and keeping my distance from the sizzling wires that dance out of the smoke like snakes in a cursed tomb. In the distance, I hear a popping sound that I think is gunfire, like we're under attack. I freeze. Secondary explosions, Sergeant Ginsler groans in the dark. Fire spreading. I need some help. A new voice calls out, a man somewhere in front of me. I'm trapped under a copier. I press my forehead to the floor, where it's cooler and the air is a little easier to breathe. I need to think for a second. There are too many people who need help and I'm just one kid crawling on his belly in the dark. I'm not sure what to do and I want to cry. If I could just stay here a second and cry, then maybe someone would come and help me. I'm just a kid, right? I shouldn't have to do this. I can't do this. I don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing in the first place. I just want my dad. Dad. The thought crashes into me like an airplane falling out of the sky. I need to find my dad's office and make sure he's okay. I need to tell him that I'm okay. I can't lie here waiting in the burning dark, or else I'll never get that chance. I have to move, I have to take action, and I have to get out of here. Like Sergeant Ginsler said. I start to crawl in the direction that feels cooler, which I figure is the most likely way out, when something snags me, stops me moving. It's nothing physical that stops me. I get snagged on that voice in my head, the voice we all have that's quieter sometimes and louder others. But it's always there, the voice telling me the right thing to do. I think about my mom, how she must have had this voice too. But her addictions were louder than it was. They led her to make mistakes, to run away into drinking and pills when she should have been running toward her responsibilities, toward me. She didn't listen to that voice in her head. Maybe she felt like she couldn't, or maybe she couldn't even hear it anymore, but the choice she did make hurt her and hurt me too, even though it was probably easier at the time. I can't make the easier choice, the less scary choice. I told Lena I'd find her baby and I can't run away from that now, no matter how scared I am. I'm smaller than any of these adults, and I can move through this rubble. I have to at least try. When I moved into my dad's place, I helped him set up my bedroom. There were all these huge boxes for the dresser and the bed, and I wanted to arrange them myself. As I went to grab a really big one, he stopped me and said, "You don't have to lift more than you can carry." He meant it about more than boxes, but I lifted the big box that day anyway. It hurt, but I moved it into place. And today, this hurts, but I can carry it. I can do this. I swallow my fear and my panic and my sadness, and I turn again toward the heat, continuing my circle, searching and sweeping the ground, straining through every smoky breath. The wreckage is sharp. Small bits of it cut my forearms as I pull myself along. Anywhere my skin touches feels hot, and I can't tell if the smell of burning hair is coming from me or not. I don't want to think about what else I'm smelling. I wish I could just shut my nose off and not smell at all. My nostrils hurt with the chemical stink around me. If a smell could be translated into a sound, this would be like a death metal concert with no earplugs. I run into what I think is a desk turned on its side, the metal legs all bent and twisted. I turn to push past it, when I see something in the spot where the drawers should be. One of the deep drawers is still in place. It must have been locked when the explosion happened, but there's an open hole where the lower one had been knocked out, and there is something soft in that space, sheltered from the heat and wreckage, a blanket. My heart jumps and I shove myself forward, thrusting my hands into the opening to grab the lumpy blanket. It reeks of gas fumes and I swipe it away, letting it fall onto the floor as I pull the small squirming thing away from it, curling around and bringing my face close so I can feel the breath of the little baby on my cheek. I have him. I shout as loud as my scratchy throat will let me. I found your baby. Ms. Lena. I found him. The silence that follows lasts 7 breaths. I count each one of them, ears buzzing, heart thundering, a tiny baby cradled against me. I'm curled over him like a turtle shell, like my fragile flesh and bones could protect this infant if the Pentagon came down around us. Which it might. I'm coming. Lena finally shouts. Keep making noise so I can find you. Over here. Right here. I yell. But it's really hard and I can't catch my breath. I guess the yelling was scary though, because that starts the baby crying, and I'm glad for it. Every mother in the world will find her way to the sound of her own baby crying, no matter the dark or the danger. Even my mother. I picture my mother's face in the dark now, I'm agonizing that it's her crawling through the burning rubble to save me. I'm coming, baby. Lena calls out to her infant son. I imagine her voice is my mom's voice, calling out to me. It makes me feel brave. Except my mom's locked up on the other side of the country and I'm far from safe. Does she even know what's happening here? Does she worry about Dad and me? Is the whole country under attack? Will the guards even tell her what's going on? I want to be there when she gets out. I want to tell her what I did today. I want to survive this. Just then, something stings me. It feels like a bee, except that makes no sense. I look up and see the ceiling drip. The fire is turning the ceiling tiles into boiling liquid. I feel it sizzle where it plops on my back, burning right through my shirt. I grit my teeth and try not to let out one of the 7 worst curse words I know, because I don't think I should curse in front of a baby. My dad once told me that there's a time and a place for everything, even curse words, and growing up is learning to judge for yourself when that time and place is. If you think it might be the wrong time, then you're probably right. Trust your instincts, kiddo. You know more than you think. The sizzling pain brings tears to my eyes, but it keeps me from thinking too hard about my mom or dad. Suddenly, Lena is there. And she's taking her son from my hands. She's crouched with me, rocking him, cooing to calm him, but she sits up higher than me and is quickly doubled over, coughing from the smoke. The building rumbles. I hear crashing, breaking glass. Is the Pentagon coming down around us, or just burning up with us in it? Neither option is good and both are possible. You we have to stay near the floor, I tell her. Do I know a way out? I think so, she says, and points in what I think is the direction I came from. I shake my head. That way's blocked. I think the explosion started there. Head to the interior. Sergeant Ginsler calls out from the dark. Remember 80 Drive? A fit of coughing cuts him off, and for a moment I worry he died, but he starts up again. I can see light that way, a hole in the building. You can get out. Go now. What about you? I yell back. Mikey, go. He replies. And the guy under the copier? I yell. You still there? No reply comes. My gut twists. I know what no reply means. Mikey, there is no time. Get out of there. Sergeant Ginsler bellows. I look at Lena. She's bent down, holding her baby against her, and I can see that she's favoring one leg. Her outfit is scorched and there are burns on one side of her face and shoulder. There's no way she can make it through this wreckage alone to the hole in the wall that Sergeant Ginsler is talking about. This isn't a choice a kid should have to make. But then again, it's not much of a choice at all. I have to go with her and the baby. I have to get them to safety. I have to leave Sergeant Ginsler behind. We slither along the floor in the dim light. I hear distant fire alarms and some sort of muffled announcement, but I can't even begin to make out what it's saying. Whatever emergency fire systems the Pentagon has in place aren't working in this part of the building, probably because they're all melted. The sprinklers in this room aren't even on. Not that it matters, because it's not the fire that's most dangerous for us right now. It's the smoke. It keeps getting thicker and thicker, so black I can see its darkness even in the dark. It's as low as the desks and we have to stay almost lying down just to breathe. Even the clear air by the floor is chunky as chicken soup. The heat down at the floor makes it feel like I'm standing too close to a bonfire trying to roast a marshmallow, except I'm the marshmallow. The flames aren't even all that close to me. It's so hot that I can feel my skin scalding, and steam rises from my soaked clothes. This room is not going to be survivable much longer. At least the kid in Hatchet only had to worry about himself. I'm frightened for Lena and her baby too. We crawl along the floor and the building rumbles above us. Weirdly, there's a desk right in front of me that hasn't moved at all. It's covered in dust and bits of debris, but it's otherwise untouched while everything around it is in shambles. The computer is still in its spot, plugged into nothing. The chair is pushed in and there's even a mug filled with pens, totally undisturbed. A light sweater hangs off the back of the chair. I pull it down, giving it to Lena to wrap her child in for extra protection against the smoke and sharp edges all around us. She coughs as she nods to thank me. We rest for a moment at the desk, where the air is slightly cooler, like it's a bus shelter in a summer storm. I don't know how a blast radius works, or how shrapnel spreads, but somehow this one piece of boring office furniture dodged the utter destruction around it, through a trick of physics or luck or fate. I'm not sure why, but I feel like this desk means we're headed in the right direction. It's like a sign, if a desk can survive here, maybe we can too. I'm grasping for meaning where there maybe is none, but I need something to keep me going. Otherwise, I'll start thinking about that man under the copier and his silence, or about Sergeant Ginsler, trapped somewhere in the inferno, and then I won't be able to keep going. Just because there's fear in my stomach and pain in my body and doubt in my mind doesn't mean I have to listen to any of it. I decide what I do, not my fears and not these fires. Nothing will stop me, not even myself. I take the deepest breath I can, which hurts and makes me cough some more, but I get enough air to keep moving. The smoke is so thick even 2 feet off the ground that I don't think I'd last a minute trying to breathe it. At least against the floor, I can see a little bit to make our way. Without a word, we crawl on, though both of us could have used more rest. We have no time. Every second that passes the air gets hotter and harder to breathe. My visibility keeps getting worse, too, and my eyes burn. I have no idea how the rest of the huge building is doing, but if it's anything like the Navy Command Center, the casualties are going to be horrific. I think of the 20,000 people who work here. How many are dead or dying right now? I want to throw up, but I'm determined that this woman, this baby, and I will not be among the dead. Not here. Not today. We press on, gasping through thin cloth, fighting for every breath like we're mountaineers trying to summit Everest. It takes what feels like forever to reach what I think is the inner wall of C-Ring, though there is a literal mountain of rubble in the way and I'm not certain exactly where we are. The air feels a tiny bit cooler here, and brighter, and when I look toward the top of this rubble heap, I can see light. It's not the terrifying blue-orange glow of fire but a gentle white gleam and a stream of thick black smoke pouring out above it. Daylight! I shout, which sets Lena's baby crying again, which gives me an idea. I shout louder. If you can hear my voice or the baby crying, head this way. There's daylight. Sergeant Ginsler. I hear you, Mikey, he calls back. I'll do my best. Now, go. I scuttle to the side to help Lena forward ahead of me. I start to turn. I can go back to get Sergeant Ginsler now that I know the way out. It had taken a long time to get here, but I could do it again. My knee hurts and my lungs are burning. My throat's scratchy and my eyes feel like they're filled with sand. Even my sweat hurts where my skin is raw from the heat, but I'm certain I can make it back to where I'd come from, find the sergeant, and escort him out the same way. A Marine never leaves a man behind, and though I'm not yet a man, I'm not going to leave a Marine behind. Lena starts to crawl up the mountain of broken steel and glass and concrete and plastic with one arm around her baby, which makes for unsure footing. She stumbles on the first steps up, as the rubble shifts. I freeze, watching her struggle, and my heart sinks. My work is not yet done. I go to her side, taking her arm to stabilize her, and help her, step by step, up the mountain. By the time we reach the top, we're both gasping and the baby is coughing and wheezing a little. The daylight is so bright it's blinding, but I immediately know I won't make it back down into the room again. The smoke is already belching out thick behind us. Looking back, I can't even see the way we came from. Even just turning to look makes me flinch because the air is so hot on my face. The fire's growing, spreading, and now, from up here, I know why. Everything smells like jet fuel. I know the smell. I remember it from the tarmac, waiting to take off on the flight that took me to the East Coast, away from my mother, toward this day. Toward right now. My father. A plane has crashed into the Pentagon. Just like at the World Trade Center, and I'm standing on a pile of rubble in a hole in the wall made by the force of that explosion. I'm dimly aware of people in uniform rushing to Lena, escorting her down the pile into the open air of the wide AE drive. Someone gives her oxygen, which she's trying to give to her baby instead, though the mask doesn't fit. A few sailors are yelling, waving to get a medic's attention, and my companions from the rubble are led away without another look back. I'm frozen still, staring at the clear blue sky, grateful it's still there, grateful I'm seeing it again and gulping air from it. But I don't feel safe. My watch still works. It's 9:49 in the morning. It's only been about 10 minutes since the explosion.